The following program is a presentation of the Christian Science Church in your community.
Muy bien, gracias amigo. Gracias. Gracias. Muy bien, gracias amigo. Gracias.
Thank you. My name is Julio Rivas, and I'm glad to be here. Let me start with a personal story. As you well know, in Los Angeles, there is always an attraction because of the stars that live there. And everybody's always looking for the actor, their favorite actor, their favorite actress. Well, most of these people live in Malibu, Beverly Hills, and the Hollywood Hills. And Madonna, of course, has made the Hollywood Hills famous again. Brad Pitt has moved into the Hollywood Hills, and they all own these multi-million dollar homes, etc. Well, a lot of tourist buses and a lot of cars filled with tourists go into the hills looking for these homes or looking for any other actor they can catch a glimpse of. And as I was jogging on these narrow streets, and I live in the hillside, in the less expensive side of the hillside, but definitely in the hillside, and as I was jogging these narrow streets, a car pulled up, slowed down, and all these guys started staring at me. And then they sped up again, they slowed down again, they started staring at me some more, and then finally they were arguing among themselves. Finally, at the last moment, they just put their car right in front of my path. They all got out, and they were the most friendly, happiest bundle of guys. And the reason is, they all started saying, "It's Charlie Sheen, it's Charlie Sheen." They were South American, so they were speaking Spanish among themselves. "It's Charlie Sheen, muchacho, it's Charlie Sheen, dame la foto, hombre." So, as they were making all the efforts, they came and grabbed me and held me. And then they said, "Toma la foto, chico, toma la foto. Si la fotografía que te enseñé cómo tomar, tómala." Which means, take the picture, guy. You know how to click the camera. Take it, you know. We're holding up Charlie Sheen here, you know. People may confuse us with someone else. And sometimes they confuse us because of the color of our skin, because of the accent we speak. They don't really know us. God knows us. And that's the one that we really need to know first. You know, because we don't even know ourselves oftentimes. And that's what this lecture is about, what God knows. If we don't know ourselves, we can't change for the better. And as we start getting to know ourselves through the eyes of God, through God's eyes, we discover talents in ourselves that we never knew about, abilities within ourselves that no one has any idea of. Instead of thinking that a culture, a race, money, physical shape determines who we are, let's take a glimpse, a humble glimpse into what God's divine view of us is. And it is a divine view. Because he sees much more than the color of our skin, our accent, the food we like, what shapes and forms us physically. He sees a spiritual essence about us. A divinity that is the expression of his own being, his own nature. Let me give you an example how what God knows can change our lives in practical ways. Not just make us feel a little bit better about ourselves, but make practical, deep differences that can protect us, heal us of even disease itself. I was 14 years old, growing up in L.A. It's got beautiful areas, of course, but violence does permeate Los Angeles in many ways, like it does, I guess, in many other cities. And I was headed home. I grew up right in the Hollywood neighborhood. And I was only 14 years old. Now, dealing with gang members, it was a way of my life. I mean, I knew them. I never belonged to a gang, but I knew what they were up to. I knew the slang. I knew how to hang a little bit with them and so on and so on. I could just be acceptable to them without getting in trouble and still be able to lead my own life. And when it came to fighting, you have to do your share of fighting, too. So you do just enough not to get caught up doing anything that's really horrible, but to defend yourself. They'll leave you alone. They'll respect you and so forth. That's the life of a teenage kid growing up in areas that are violent. Well, little did I expect that I was going to encounter what was just a gang fight, an aggressive, violent gang fight. As I got to the stoplight, and I had a buddy with me, and I was waiting for the light, and I noticed some guys hanging out, but, you know, seeing gang members was nothing new to me. You know, they were posing, as always, you know, and so forth. And they had their knives, etc. They had the look in their eyes, and basically you just look and glance past them. You never look straight into their eyes because that's a challenge. And even I, at times, was tempted to believe that somebody looking into your eyes meant They were challenging you. It meant a fight. It's ridiculous. But it meant a fight. And so I just glanced at him and I kept waiting for my light. And then all of a sudden, on my left-hand side, I see about 10 guys running with big machete, which is these long knives. And the guys that belonged to the gang that was already there started running away. Well, they got caught. I felt like running, but at that moment, something told me, don't run, stop. Don't run. And I just stood there. And what was incredible about it is, to most people, is that I didn't feel afraid. It was like a flash of fear, and then it dissipated. Said, God has an answer for you. Now, I'd grown up in Sunday school. Believing in God was a part of my life. I didn't go around talking about it, but it was part of who I am. And it's always been so. It's always been a part of my home. And I knew God had an answer for me, besides the fact that they were so close to me already. And three of them, the others had taken off all of a sudden, chasing the other guys and cutting up on the other guys. And then three of them came right up to me. And as he was about to swing, he stops. I'm looking straight into his eyes. He's looking straight into my eyes. And he doesn't do it. And he lowers the machete down. There's hatred. There's anger in his eyes. And there isn't any in me, because I'm praying. And not praying, begging God to save me. At that moment, to me, prayer meant, what does God want me to know about this moment? And in brevity, I could say that God wanted to have me feel his presence, have me sense that he was there as a father and a mother, a source, a fountain of life to them and to myself, uniting us within a spiritual brotherhood. It didn't matter that he could have been, he was Japanese-American, the guy standing in front of me. I knew the other guys were Hispanics, and there were some African-Americans. It didn't really matter. There was a spiritual brotherhood that embraced everyone and united us. And I knew that. I was convinced of that. And with total confidence, not with a macho kind of style in your face, I just looked at him. And then he was trying to figure out, why isn't this guy running away from me? And then all of a sudden, his eyes softened. And he said, which sounded funny, not that I would laugh in front of him, do you belong to so-and-so gang? Well, they don't wait to ask you if you belong to so-and-so gang. They cut you up first or shoot you first, and then maybe they're wrong. And I said, no, I don't. I'm just going home. And he stares at me again now, and then he immediately turns on his heels and runs off, and the other two right behind him to chase the other guys. And I knew it's time to get out of there. But not running. I was going to walk away from there. And as soon as I try to walk away from there, there's a car full of young men, high school age. They step out of their cars with shotguns in their hands. And they start shooting every which way. Now, I know some of these guys. They're much older than I am. They belong to the local high school I'll eventually go to. And they're just shooting. And when a gang fight has erupted, they shoot at each other almost. Because you can't always have, like they have on TV, the good guys on one side and the bad guys on the other. Everybody's shooting at everybody. And I recognize one of the guys with a gun. And he has a gun aimed at me. And I'm shocked. Why is he aiming that gun at me? And I yell out, no dispares, no dispares, because he spoke Spanish. He says, don't shoot, don't shoot, no dispares, soy yo, which is me, it's me, recognize me. But he shot anyway. But again, God's protection was there, because he missed me. He may not have known at that moment it was me, who knows, but he missed me. And it was mayhem there, and I just kept running and running. And running and praying, not anymore for my safety, because I knew it was safe, but I kept praying for these individuals. Because imagine the loss to the parents. I had known guys who had died. They were with you one semester and no longer with you the other semester. I had known young ladies who had died at their 16-year-old birthday party. Or as in Spanish they say, their quinceañeras, their 15-year-old birthday parties. Where mommy's celebrating something special for that daughter and that daughter no longer lives the next day. I had seen plenty of that. And I kept embracing them in my love for them. Because I knew what had been taught in Sunday school was true. They were God's children. And it transcended any cultural, hateful, race, color of skin differences. What God knew blessed each and every one there in some form or other. It blessed me for sure, in spite of all that mayhem that went on. Because God was there to bless people, as He's always been there, as the omnipotent, only, ever-present, infinite love that makes a difference in our lives, that heals us. Christ Jesus knew that. He took that into every circumstance He met. He took that feeling of what God knew about people, and He healed them. He raised people from the dead, healed countless diseases. And He's called our Master because He sets an example for us and how we should live in relationship with each other. And it was a multicultural environment because the city He spent a lot of time in, Capernaum, had people from all over the world. Many different languages. In a way, it makes me feel like L.A. or any other major city. But what He knew is what mattered most. And it's what made the difference for so many who were in great pain and great suffering, because they were healed by His understanding of what God understood to be our true makeup. God sees us in more than physical ways. God sees us in a spiritual way, in a way that transcends our physical bodies, in a way that transcends our diseases, in a way that transcends our DNA makeup. God penetrates right past all those things and sees the colors of spirit in us, the hues of divine love, of His spiritual goodness within each and every one of us. And for us to accept that, to discern that, to humbly wake up to that view heals us. Because it leaves us knowing more about ourselves than we ever imagined was possible. It's called the grace of God revealing itself to our thought and our hearts. There's a woman from the 19th century who was also a great healer. This woman's name is Mary Baker Eddy. She healed remarkably, instantaneously, and she healed hundreds of people because she understood in a certain way what God knows about every one of us. And it is that knowledge that heals for us today. She took that spiritual view of man into every situation she was going to heal. She healed sometimes even without knowing that she was healing. And it came to her through a radical new view of God's nature. Oftentimes we pray to a God up there somewhere, invisible, but maybe He's a certain way, maybe He's good sometimes or angry other times and so on. But it's not a God you plead with. It's a God that you have to feel and understand in the way He wants you to feel Him and understand Him. And that will give you an answer from Him that you will understand and that will mean the difference for you, that will heal your life. Mrs. Eddy wrote of this God this way: God, the great I am, the all-knowing. What does that God know? Divinity. He's divine. He's pure. He's spirit. He's love. He doesn't know hatred. He doesn't know disease. He's perfection itself. That's all He, the divine infinite one, can know. The great I am, all life itself. The all-seeing, all-acting, all-wise, all-loving. What human being can be all-loving? And yet the divine is all-loving. And He doesn't care if you come from Bosnia, from the Middle East. Doesn't care if you come from China. He sees you as His beloved either way. Mrs. Eddy refers to Him as things like principle and mind and soul and spirit, as all substance, intelligence. It's a rich definition of God that immediately breaks our customary views of God as a thing you pray up to and maybe somehow if you can only please Him enough, but not quite ever feel comfortable. But this is the God you can feel, embraced by, loved by, helped by. And God's view of us goes something like this. Man, the real man or woman we are, the real spiritual makeup of us, is the compound idea of infinite spirit. It is the spiritual image and likeness of God, the full representation of mind. Spirit, mind, just different names for God. that break out of the corporeal sense of him. A mind all intelligent, all wise, a spirit transcending all physical limitations. So we need to know ourselves that way, outside of our corporeal material limitations, outside and beyond our sins and our weaknesses and our fears and the labels people place on us or we place on ourselves. And that will heal. And Mrs. Eddy healed that way. In one instance, she was giving an inspirational talk, and a woman attended that talk, very similar to one like this. And the woman went away with a spiritual view, a view that she had never held to before. She had a little girl that had been born with a defect. The bones in her legs below the knees were like cartilage. She went home that night feeling inspired, feeling blessed, and seeing herself and her daughter in a totally new way, as a part of God's infinite spiritual makeup, as a part of infinite spirit itself. And the next morning, that little girl had solid legs, healthy legs. She bounced out of her bed and ran to her mom. Now, you know what that means to a mom? Especially, of course, to the young lady who can now live a normal life. But to the mom, knowing that at that moment, all that changed was her view. She accepted God's divine view. Now, that isn't a healing that comes because she prayed hard enough, because she suddenly proved herself to be good enough, because she scratched somebody's back well enough, and that back, meaning God's back, suddenly wanted to scratch hers. You can't negotiate with God that way. God is, period, is perfect love, perfect giving, perfect good. And when we accept that and let it change us, we're changed. The little girl was changed. So healing is much easier than it appears to be. Changing our lives for the better is much easier than it appears to be. Because it doesn't depend on our human effort. It depends on what God has already established for each and every one of us. And it's just a discovery of it. A reconciling ourselves with that divine view, what God knows. There was a moment in my life when that also bore itself out again. And I needed God's angels to speak to me again. And Mary Baker Eddy has an interesting definition of God's angels. She calls them God's thoughts passing to man, spiritual intuitions, pure and perfect. And further on in the definition, she says, counteracting all evil, sensuality, and mortality. Those angels do something. Those thoughts are not just positive thoughts. They're divine, impelling forces, intelligent, guiding, illuminating ideas from God that change the world around us, change people, change us. My dad and I were leaving downtown Houston when our car broke down. And as we were tinkering with the car to try to get on our way, three guys came by. One big guy, about 300 pounds. Another little guy, and then about a mid-sized guy. Now, my dad grew up in Latin America in one of the toughest and poorest places you could imagine. He grew up fighting, basically. And I grew up in L.A., so fighting wasn't exactly new to me. So fighting would have been the most instinctual thing to do. But something else spoke to me. It said, don't fight. Let me take care of you. And it came with a conviction. There's a favorite passage in the Bible that says, faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. In Spanish, it means so much more to me. When I would read it in English, I would go, oh, I got to go back to the Spanish version. Because in Spanish, it says, faith is the conviction, the certainty. That's a mental quality of thought. Fe es la convicción, la certeza de lo que se espera, de lo que no se ve. Wow, that touched my heart. I knew that meant I had to change my way of thinking to feel that conviction and certainty that God has about His perfect, wonderful spiritual family and spiritual divine creation. So I took that to heart, and I did what would seem odd and strange to anybody else. I actually willingly went into the car. It was a two-door car. I was sitting in the back. They put my dad right in the middle. And immediately, instead of heading into the lighted area of town, they head into the warehouse, dark area of town. And it was nighttime already. And as I was praying to know that God had an answer, that what God knew would provide that answer, and that I needed to attune myself to that, of course, again, the most obvious thing came to mind. Love these people. You can't love what they're doing. That's evil. They've basically forced you into their car. Love them. Love the spiritual makeup that God has given them. And know that God works through them as well as through you to bless, not to injure, not to harm. And I started doing that. And then this little angel thought, in Spanish we call him angelitos. It's the diminutive, the tender way of saying little angels. In English we don't like to say little things. We want big things in America. In Spanish everything is little. It means close to our heart, you know, tender. And so angelitos. And the little angel thought that heals. And it told me, speak to them about something that's common to both of you. And I started talking about how we care for our families, how we love for their well-being, how we want to give them the best we can. And then the guy who's driving looks at the big, heavy dude, and he goes, and they start, and then they look back at the other guy, and they can't figure out what's going on. Either I forced an idiot into my car, or a nutcase, or whatever. But definitely, is it even worth bothering with this guy? Because I'm talking to him like I'm a friend of his. It's obvious they're not my friends. And I kept doing it. And then you can see my dad goes, I mean, he's in the middle and the front. He kind of goes back. And I know what that means. What are you doing back there? But he got into the groove. It took him about 30 seconds. And he said, yeah, and he starts picking up on the theme of conversation. Yeah, and then I go something like this, yeah, we have to work so hard to provide for them. And I went on and on and on. And then pretty soon the guy, you could just feel something shifted in his body language. And he looked back at me, and it was the same look that I had told you earlier in the fellow who was about to cut me up. The same softened look. And you know, they were Hispanics like I was. Violent crime doesn't respect race or culture. It could be white on white, black on black, brown on brown. Doesn't matter. Violence doesn't respect that. The elements of evil don't pause and say, do you belong to my culture or my neighbor? It'll just act out its own evil. And they didn't even really speak Spanish well, I believe. But anyway, I kept it up. Los niños que tantos queremos, hay que cuidarlos, pero hay que trabajar duro. A veces es muy difícil proveerles lo que uno quiere proveerles, todo eso, blah, blah, provide for our kids, work hard for them, and so on. And all of a sudden he responded, and he picked up on the theme and started talking about his efforts to provide for his children. And then he just turned the car around, headed back into the lighted area of town. And I felt so confident this was a new man. This was now God's man. God's man was driving that car. It wasn't an evil person anymore. God's people were in that car. And we had found what connects each one to the other. God's divine influence in us. God's spiritual makeup. Outside of physical differences, God's divine love. And instead of just letting him drop me off right there, he says, I'll take you back to where your car is. And I said, no, it doesn't do us any good. We know it doesn't start anymore. Just take us over there. It's about a mile away. And I felt so confident. I was safe now. So he just drove me exactly to where I needed to go. He dropped me off. And after I got out, I offered some money for gas, para la gasolina. He goes, no, it's okay, it's just a favor, huh? It's just a favor. No, está bien, gracias, te lo agradezco, I'm very grateful for it, but take it anyway. I gave him some money for gas. He needed it, I knew he needed it, and so on. But it had converted every one of us. I could have been a victim, they could have been victimizers. But the point is, we were all blessed. It's interesting. When we look at the Bible, it always tells us that God is ready for us. All we have to do is listen. In Luke, Jesus Christ tells us, "And I say unto you, ask and it shall be given you. Seek and ye shall find. Knock and it shall be opened unto you. For everyone that asketh, receiveth." Jesus Christ is sure that it does take place. He's convinced of it. And we should be too. It's just allowing what God has given to transform us. That's the part sometimes that we want to resist with. "Give it to me, God, but don't demand for me to change. I'm happy the way I am." But you, with God, you can't negotiate. He calls the shots. The divine has given you all and is giving you all his love. And you have to just take it and respond and let it mold you and you. Going from a tendency for violence, maybe at times because of what God has given us, to a more loving approach is a change. Sometimes it means bigger changes from us. Getting over our resentments, our hatreds, our anger, our sense of identifying ourselves only as race or culture would define us. Oh, those are just straitjackets. They pigeonhole us. We're spiritual children before God. And again, it's knowing what God knows that makes a difference in our lives. One of my favorite passages in the Bible, and just once again reaffirms God's readiness. "Before they call, I will answer. While they're yet speaking, I will hear." Wow. To have a God ever present and yet all powerful every moment to bless us. Once again, God knows us in a form that heals us. God knows us as spiritual beings held in his love and his perfection. Dios sabe lo que somos. God knows who and what we are. What God knows is here for each and every one of us. And what God knows is something so special about each and every one of you. And is there to heal you.